Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone, and a beautiful Shabbat it is. Hey, when we were at the UMJC conference, we heard it was real hot over here. Is that true? Like 100, you know? Oh, okay. We had 80s. What a great conference. You know what I saw emerge at this conference? And I really hope you'll all come next year to the UMJC conference. It'll be in Columbus, Ohio. But this conference was great. We saw greatness emerge at this conference. And I'm going to be very specific. Jared Eaton, who is soon to be the leader of Simchat Israel in Connecticut, he gave a drash on Saturday morning. Forget about it. It was fabulous. His use of the text and the humor, it was a measured amount of humor, not too much. The use of the text, his use of Midrash, his elevating of Yeshua, it was nothing short of magnificent. I mean, we're talking about talent. But not to be undone, our very own Nathan Morell and another gentleman whose wife had been with Ruach years ago, Josh Guzman, they led the Kabbalat Shabbat service on Friday. Again, I have to speak in superlatives. It was magnificent. You should have seen Nathan lead this thing. I was so proud of him. We're seeing greatness emerge among some of these young folks. Then what about Seth Klayman, the leader of Sha'arei Shalom in the Carolinas, in North Carolina? He gave a talk on Saturday night about his congregation having been vandalized by anti-Semites. You know about that. It was national news. And it was a talk that was just so wonderful. We're talking about great stuff. And let's not leave out Serena Nickel, who is the first woman executive of the UMJC. And she gave a terrific talk, a brief but terrific talk about the union. It's just plain encouraging. And all of this raises the question of where does greatness come from for the sake of the kingdom of God? And that's what I want to talk to you about, actually from our Parsha. Now, first point I'd like to make is that in Judaism, it's a wonderful thing, there is a tremendous gravitation toward what we'll call an equal access to greatness. It is not a hierarchical system, which I'm going to explain to you as go along. So when we think about ancient Israel, we think about who got to be the leaders. Well, the king would inevitably appoint whom? His son. So it doesn't matter whether the kid was a shlemiel or a no-goodnik. The son got appointed. And we see this ebb and flow in ancient Israel. You read about it in the Bible, of some good kings and then the next generation, not so good. And it's a God-appointed thing for the sake of the stability of the society, etc. You have kings appointing sons. Now, what about priests? Well, when we think about priests, we think obviously of Aaron the priest. And again, we have a hereditary system where Nadab and Abihu and others, two others of his sons are appointed. So you have the sons being appointed to positions of leadership in the political sphere, the realm of the king, and in the realm of the priests. Now, Maimonides makes a very, very important observation about what he calls three crowns. So keep this in mind, three crowns, meaning three sources of authority and power in Israel. And I'm just going to read it. It's not long, but it's a famous quote from the famous 12th century rabbi, Moses Maimonides Rambam. The tradition is summed up in the famous Maimonidean's ruling. Here it is. With three crowns was Israel crowned, with the crown of Torah, the crown of priesthood, and the crown of kingship. The crown of priesthood was bestowed on Aaron and his descendants, as we discussed. The crown of kingship was conferred on David and his successors. We think of Solomon, his son. But the crown of Torah, get this now, the crown of Torah is for all Israel. Whoever wishes, let them come and take it. Do not suppose that the other two crowns are greater than that of Torah. The crown of Torah is greater than the other two crowns. Now, what is he saying? The crown of Torah means that leadership is conferred on those who have the disciplines and the character and the stick-to-itiveness and other qualities we'll talk about to be leaders in Israel. It is not hereditary. Rabbis don't become rabbis by heredity. Okay? That's the big point. Any Jew can become great in Israel. That's what we're talking about. In our Parsha, and this ties to our Parsha, keep in mind our Parsha this week is five chapters, and we read just one section of it, which is our custom in the congregation. We don't read the whole Parsha, but earlier in the Parsha, we read about this impulse toward a kind of egalitarianism in leadership in Israel. So let me explain what this was all about. In the Parsha, we read about Tzelophehad's daughters. And Tzelophehad's daughters, he was a gentleman in Israel who died, and he had a number of daughters. But because inheritance was conferred to sons, and he had no sons, the daughters were wondering, what's going to happen to our inheritance? We won't have an inheritance. They go to Moses and explain the situation that their inheritance in Israel is about to be lost. Moses says, okay, let me check with the Lord on this. Back then, you know, he had that direct access, immediate, right? So he goes to God, and God says, this is an amazing act of condescension on his part and mercy and, you know, just God's character. He says, you know what, Moses? Zelophehad's daughters are right. They are right. They deserve inheritance. So he adds to the Torah right then and there. Right? It's a great moment. And Zelophehad's daughters were not deprived of their inheritance. Well, Moses, thinking about this, says, you know, Zelophehad's daughters came and argued for their own self-interest in a good sense. Maybe it's my turn to go to God and say, I would like something too. So he goes to God and says, God, I have a couple of requests. Number one, I want to get into the promised land. But God says, I'm sorry, Moses. I have to deny your request. You can't get into the promised land. You recall that? Moses never makes it. It had to do with a bad moment that he had, but being the high-level leader that he was, the bad moment had implications that were in one sense, tragic. All right, but Moses asked something else. I would like my sons to take my place in leadership in Israel. Well, again, he's disappointed. God says, Moses, no. It is not by heredity that the Torah will be passed on in Israel, him being the lawgiver, the giver of Torah. It's not going to be that way. Instead, not one of your sons, but Joshua, he is going to be your successor. Why Joshua? Because as we read the text about Joshua, he is such a menschy young guy, loyal to Moses, loyal to God's purposes, showing himself having tremendous character and integrity. And Moses is an old man. He's not going to take Israel into the promised land. And God disappoints him, but appoints Joshua. Now, it's very interesting. I was thinking about our synagogue a little bit. And, you know, I have three terrific sons, you know. Love them. Love those guys. Love my daughter, Julie, too. But, you know, they're not going to be the successor here at Ruach Israel. They'll help. Dan and Tess want to move back here and be part of the community. Joel helps out. Dave, obviously, is very helpful. But they're not going to be my successor. Who do you think might be? Any guesses? Do. Rabbi Nathan. Now, there's a possibility right there, don't you think? Yeah, why not? Now, listen, not immediately. We're working on this whole thing, right? And let me say, there's a constitutional thing that the membership has to agree, right? But I think that that's just natural, and I've already begun discussing this with the leadership, so no big surprises here. Not one of my sons. Likely Rabbi Nathan is going to be the Joshua. Now, I know of some situations, one particular situation in Messianic Judaism, where it's like a dynasty. You know, it's like the Father to the Son. Not our way. Not our way. Nope. It's not heredity. It is not gaining power because of family. That happens too often in history. It's not our way. We Nichols are not into power. We're into serving, and that's what it's all about. And that's true for my whole family, too. Again, I just want to, some of you may think, ooh, is Rabbi Rich going somewhere? No, I'm not going anywhere. I'll tell you why. When Sue and I came, I was, 29, something like that. Sue was roughly same age. Why did we come? And what was our reason? Well, we came because we had been with a ministry, a Messianic Jewish group, which was folding because of some bad things that some people were doing. But in addition to that, it wasn't the only reason. I wanted to become the leader of a congregation, and I'll quote myself from back then, and maybe some of you, maybe Gary remembers me saying this, I want to give myself to one community of people for a lifetime. Because in a world where there's so much in the way of abandonment by male authority figures, I want to give myself to one community. Now, in a sense, it was a bit idealistic. You can be there, but the community can change. Okay, but that's all right. I want to give myself to one community for a lifetime. So I'm not going anywhere. You know, we'll work out all the details on that. But that is my commitment. But my thought is, and I know many are in agreement with this, that Ruach Israel's 40th birthday is coming, and we should begin thinking about, we had our first 40 years, good. What about the next 40, you see? So that is the point that we're making here, and you've really got to turn things over more and more to younger people. But they need us old guys and old, you know, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it goes both ways. We understand all that. Okay, no one of Moses' sons is going to take Israel into the promised land. Now, the rabbis pick up on this idea that it wasn't Moses' sons, that the third crown, the crown of Torah, manifests itself in a deeply rooted value which develops in rabbinic Judaism and Judaism as we know it. Physical pedigree does not determine leadership among Israel, but identification with the people and giftedness and commitment and learning. Those are the qualifications. Not who your dad was. This is it, and it's encouraging for all of us. Listen, people will follow if they sense that you know them and care about them. We try. And this is true in the macro level. You know, right now you got this whole Brexit thing, and Britain wants a breakaway, and you can have your own thoughts on that, and I don't want to get into the politics of it, but I do want to point out that I think some of the motivation for many Brits feeling they really don't want to be part of the European Union has to do with the fact that they don't want people who they don't feel care about them in Brussels making rules for the whole society, and it creates a certain negative reaction because leaders are not supposed to be that way. So last of all, let's talk about Yeshua, and let's see how he manifests, and I don't want to say echoes, but I want to say reflects or concurs with the development of Judaism in this respect. When we think of his followers, they were just regular folks, no heredity. Listen to the words from Yochanan chapter 15. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know what is his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You didn't choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you may go bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. You see the same idea? The crown is earned through what you do and the kind of mensch you're becoming and your commitments to the community and to learn and to grow and to become a better Jew and a better human being and to love people. And that is how leadership is gained. Let me say this. On December 7th, now put that in your calendar, we are going to have a bash from Bashland. We are going to have a birthday party like, forget it. I just learned that Jonathan Burness will be here. He'll be our Saturday morning speaker. Isn't that wonderful? from Jewish Voice, and we're negotiating with a very famous Messianic Jewish musician to be here on Saturday night for our gala concert. Can't give the name yet, but you will know who I'm talking about. So we're going to celebrate our 40th birthday, and it's going to be a great bash. But again, the question is raised, what about the next 40 years? Who will take Ruach and Messianic Judaism the next step toward the promised land? Answer, you can. You can. By study, by love for the community, by commitment to Yeshua and to his purposes, there are many worthy activities under the sun. Let me close with this. There are a lot of good things to do. But I want to leave you with the challenge that at the end of the day, when all is said and done, and when you look back in your life and you evaluate your life for what you did and what you became, I just want to suggest to you that embracing the third crown, embracing Torah in the larger sense, including Yeshua and building all the things that we're building, building Malkut Shemayim, Hashemayim, is really, really the best, most satisfying thing you can do. So let us, as we prepare for our next 40 years, think about how we can all become really the best we can possibly be for the sake of Yeshua and his purposes among our people. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Messiah.